Thank you for joining us today, and welcome to Talk About with Rez and Andy. I'm your host, Linda Rez, and I'm here with my co-host and great friend, Janie Andy Anderson.
Welcome to Talk About with Rez and Andy. Our guest today is Matt Frad, author of the book Delivered, True Stories of Men and Women Who Turned from Porn to Purity. He's also the founder of thepornefect.com and executive director of Integrity Restored and The Porn Effect. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Welcome, Matt.
Hey, good to be on. Thanks for having me.
So, Matt, where are you right now?
I live in Georgia. About 10 years ago, I met a very good-looking American woman who was worth leaving my country for. So
there
I think that. Here I am.
Okay, so you're in America. What got you into this? Our topic today is going to be the effects of pornography, and that you are an expert about this topic, and you're helping a lot of people who have addictions with pornography. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know if I'm an expert, but I suppose you could call me that. For the last several years, I've traveled the country and internationally. I speak to around 50 to 70,000 people every year on this topic. I've worked with those in the industry, producers, porn stars, and the like. And I guess the reason I got into it was, you know, I, like a lot of people today, stumbled across porn at a young age, thought it was pretty exciting, because it was. And then after a while, I kind of didn't really like the effects I was seeing, and I didn't like the sort of person I was becoming. And I decided I would rather live a porn-free life, and so began trying to do that, and began reaching out to others who also might want to do that.
So did you almost have an epiphany then on this? I mean, one day you woke up
and
said,
was the
no
big
more?
Change?
Well, you know, there's a Polish philosopher by the name of Karol Wojtyła who went on to become Pope John Paul II. And when he was a cardinal in Poland, he wrote a book called Love and Responsibility. And in that book, he has this quote. He says, "The human person is a good towards which the only proper attitude is love." And probably when I was about 17 years old, I started to believe that was true. And if it was true, then I guess I had to ask myself, you know, does porn constitute an attitude of love towards those in the industry or towards my future bride? You know, is this, am I training myself to be the sort of husband I want to be one day? And I came to the conclusion that there was no on both accounts, and I, for that reason, I stopped. I mean, there's also selfish reasons, you know. I was wasting a lot of time online, so I could be using my creative energy elsewhere. I was a musician, I'd write poetry and this sort of thing, and had a lot of great friends. But a lot of that, I guess, just the time to do those sorts of things got sucked away by my use of porn.
So what would you say, because it's the porn effect, so I imagine there's some effects of porn. One of them would be wasting time. What would some other things possibly be that people would experience?
Yeah, well, I'd say there's a myriad of them. Let's address a couple. Dr. Abraham Morgenthaler is the clinical urologist researcher at Harvard Medical School. And he's beginning to talk a lot about what he calls porn-induced erectile dysfunction. So, and this, of course, comes about because pornography can, when people use it compulsively, it can affect the brain in negative ways. And there's a lot of studies coming out that are beginning to show that. And so what he's finding is there's a lot of young men, college age and around that, who are using pornography so much that it's kind of frying their brain so that when they try and have sex with a real person, they're actually either suffering something like premature ejaculation or erectile dysfunction. So there's one effect. Now, obviously, that doesn't happen with every person who looks at porn, but it is a growing phenomena that I think we need to take seriously. And the other is, as I say, it does have an effect on the brain. So there is a neurotransmitter in the brain called dopamine. And among other things, it plays a key role in the pleasure-reward system of the brain. It's what incentivizes us to perform actions that are conducive to our survival and that of the species. So dopamine's released when we have a pornographic or sexual encounter. Dr. Donald L. Hilton is a neurosurgeon in San Antonio, and he was telling me and showed me the peer-reviewed journals to back it up, that when people view pornography compulsively, a downgrading occurs. such that the neurotransmitter, dopamine, begins to shrink, and the reward cells in the center of the brain, what's called the nucleus accumbens, are now starved for dopamine. So it's as if the addict has reset the pleasure thermostat in the brain, and so now he needs more porn, or whatever the drug is, but in this case, more porn, and more, you might say, deviant forms of porn, or more sort of shocking forms of porn, just to boost the dopamine levels and up enough so that he feels normal. There was another study that came out last year from Germany that said that those addicted to porn, to the degree in which they were addicted, had there were parts of their brains that were smaller. Conan O'Brien even made a joke about this on his Late Show, saying, well, this explains why the porn clocks are always so thin and lousy. But in the scientific abstract, and I'll close with this, in the scientific abstract, they said, we are not saying that porn caused the shrinkage of these brains. It may just be that people with smaller brains are more attracted to porn. And I thought, well, either way, it's not a feather in your cap. So I think regardless of what one's moral stance is towards pornography, they might not have a moral problem with it. I think there are a lot of people who are beginning to speak up and say, actually, there's a medical problem with it. So I think we ought to be taking that seriously.
Now, Matt, in your in your books and in your talks, of which I have followed, addiction is more prevalent with men. Is that correct?
Men do seem to have the corner market on pornography. There's the old stereotype that women read romance novels, although I'm not sure how much romance is going on, but that's what they say, and the men are more visually stimulated. Now, there's probably some truth to that. I don't know how many people out there bought 50 Shades of Stupid, how many men. but I do think that...
Too many,
I don't think so. And that's not just because this particular book was aimed at women. I think if it were aimed at men, I still don't think you make it a bestseller. So I think there's some truth in that. However, we just have to move away from that stereotype a bit, because I think a lot of women who do struggle with visual porn, they find it, and I think rightly so, insulting when we say to them, you shouldn't be struggling with it, this is a guy's thing. So there certainly is a growing rate of young women getting hooked on visual porn.
Well, so what do you think the statistics are, people who, and I guess I need to ask too, where would you say it becomes an addiction? So how many people would you think, and when you do define that, how many people are addicted?
You know, that's a great question. The word addiction incites a lot of controversy. It's debated in-house among psychologists and psychiatrists as to exactly what that word means, if it's helpful to apply it to people or not. So I've met people who say, you shouldn't call people addicts, because if you do that, you label them, and then that becomes part of their identity, and they feel they can never escape that identity. I've met others who say, you know what, this is great, because it actually explains what I feel, and so it's kind of liberating. So maybe instead of debating terms, I'm more interested in getting, I suppose, to the concept behind the term. What is it we mean when we talk about addiction? I think this is a pretty good colloquial definition of addiction. If you just say an addiction is that where a person maybe compulsively performs a certain action that has negative consequences and continues to do so even in light of those negative consequences. In 2011, the American Society of Addiction Medicine modified its definition of addiction to include behavioral addictions. Now, this is pretty big, because those who would argue porn addiction and sex addiction aren't real tend to argue as follows. They'll say, only drugs can be addictive. Porn isn't a drug, right? You don't inhale it. You don't inject porn. Therefore, it's not addictive. But what the American Society of Addiction Medicine is saying is that, you know, while it's true that porn isn't a drug, it does elicit neurotransmitters in the brain, which the brain can become addicted to. And so as far as the percentage, I'm not sure. That's probably a subjective thing. I imagine there's people out there, let's say, you know, religious people who find any amount of pornography to be abhorrent, and I would be one of them. If, you know, they might say, oh, I'm addicted, and you might ask them a few more questions and realize, actually, I don't think that's an addiction at all. I think you just you think pornography is a bad thing, and you only looked at it once over the last, you know, 3 months, and you think this is a big deal, whereas you might meet somebody who thinks pornography is morally acceptable, and they might not think that it has any negative consequences in their life, and so consequently might say, no, I'm not addicted. Mm-hmm. But as far as how many people are looking at porn, I think, a lot. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
we all carry around in our pocket portable X-rated movie theaters that can also function as phones. So the ubiquity of pornography, I think, has made it in the minds of many a lot more acceptable.
Now, Matt, I'm going to ask you, what age group do most of these individuals become addicted to porn?
Yeah, well, again, not sure about when they become addicted, because, as I said, that can be a slippery term. But mm-hmm. as far as the average age a person encounters pornography in the United States of America, according to the statistic package found on CovenantEyes.com, which is an internet filter and accountability site, every year they put out these fantastic statistics that are all backed up very well. They say it's about 12 years old.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
I think that's a little optimistic, actually.
Yeah.
I was 8 years old, you know, before the time of the internet, and I stumbled across it. This kind of gets us into the question, I think, you know, what is porn, right? It's like, what is it? How do we define it? And if I'm in the Sistine Chapel looking up at the ceiling, am I looking at porn? And I'm not sure if that's a route you want to go down, but I think that's a question a lot of people are interested in.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a question a lot of people are interested in. What do you consider porn? Like there's the Kama Sutra tapes that people, you know, watch. Is that porn? I mean, where would you draw the line?
Well, I think what we should do is, rather than just trying to impose a line on what we find maybe subjectively unacceptable, we should first come up with, well, what is porn, and then look at those other things and run it through that filter of that definition. So I don't know what you think, but I think this is a pretty good one. If you said pornography is sexually explicit material intended to sexually arouse. Now, that might not be great, but it's kind of the best I've come up with. Sexually explicit material. What do you think of that? Do you have a...
No, I think that's
great. Do you
same.
Personally...
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
Okay, well, yeah, well, if that's what porn is... Because, you know, for example, if I'm looking at naked art at a museum, well, I don't know if this is sexually explicit material. And if it is, it's certainly not intended to sexually arouse. Okay. If you told Michelangelo that the Sistine Chapel turned you on, he'd probably question your psychological health.
Right.
Whereas if you told a pornographer, I just watched the porn film you created, but I found that, you know, the dialogue was lovely, the acting was superb, but it didn't turn me on, he'd be offended, right?
Right.
And the reason is the intention of the artist or the pornographer.
Okay.
So then you could just ask the question, well, is 50 Shades of Grey sexually explicit material intended to sexually arouse? Is Cosmopolitan magazine sexually explicit material intended to sexually arouse? Now, there's going to be times where there's going to be grey areas where we're just not sure, or it might not be that simple, not that clear cut. And I'm not saying it is every time, but I think that gives us a pretty good definition of what it is.
That is. And so I want to ask kind of a follow-up to Janie's earlier question. Do you think it's worse in the United States? We don't really have numbers of how many people are using it, and we don't really know exactly what ages, but early, because everybody has computers nowadays and it just pops up. But do you think it's worse here in the U.S. than other places?
Do I think it's worse here?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't have any kind of statistical data at my fingertips to be able to make that sort of assertion, but I imagine that anywhere that has sort of unfettered internet access, it's going to be a pretty big deal. We know that 9 out of 10 internet porn users only access free material. we know that 1 in 5 mobile searches are for pornography, which is actually, it's interesting, that's a lot, that's a bit more than those who would search porn on a desktop computer because of the anonymity of the smartphone. Mm-hmm. 24% of smartphone owners admit to having pornographic material on their mobile, you know, handset.
Oh, that's so interesting.
The porn industry generates around $13 billion every year in the U.S., so it's pretty big.
Now, Matt, can you tell us about your books? Because you do focus on wanting to help and deliver these people from porn addiction. I thought it was really interesting. You have mentioned the fact that those who have suffered betrayal trauma due to being married to one addicted to pornography. Can you explain a little bit about this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that pornography has wreaked a lot of damage upon our society. But I think one of the groups that's often overlooked is spouses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that for the most part, I'd say, you know, if you look at a typical couple where one of them's using pornography, it does tend to be the male. I saw one study where 70% of the wives who were interviewed about their husband or partner's porn addiction or sex addiction, or at least just their use of it, could be diagnosed with PTSD. So in other words, they were exhibiting the sort of things you would expect in someone who has post-traumatic stress disorder. So this is something psychologists are beginning to call betrayal trauma. And to me, it makes sense. I mean, you're a woman, you get married to this man who says, I'll love you and I want to love you forever. I want to love our kids. I want to be a good husband to you. And then one day, you know, maybe you're online and you see his history file or something like that, or you see a receipt and you see where he's been and what he's been doing. And that can be extremely traumatizing for a woman. I mean, shock, horror, confusion. Mm-hmm. What is it? What is it about me? Is it because I'm not this? Am I not that? Am I not available enough? And that sort of thing. And if he's lying to me about this, what else is he lying to me about? So because of that, my wife and I just put together a book called Restored, True Stories of Love and Trust After Porn. People can check that out at restoredbook.com. And it's a big book, like 200 pages, but we're selling them for $2 each because we just want to get it out and thinking of helping people.
Nice. So what are some things that somebody can do? I actually have known this situation before. I've had friends who their spouses were addicted to porn, and they would be out watching it while the wife was, and actually not even hiding it, but trying to go to sleep. And so it hurt the wives that I know that experienced it. They felt like their husbands didn't, you know, find them attractive or love them. And so what can they do? They were in a kind of a rock and a hard place there. They didn't really know how to stop it.
That reminds me of perhaps one of the most like horrific anecdotes. There's a lot in this book, Restored. This woman was saying that she was pregnant, I think, with their third child, and she was throwing up, you know, with morning sickness. And she called out to her husband to come and help her. And he said, when my movie's done, and he's in the bedroom masturbating to pornography. I mean, if that doesn't make you feel ill, slightly angry. I'm not sure, but I think that something might be wrong. You know, that's really terrible. Now, what can be done? I encounter a lot of wives. They'll come up to me after conferences and say things, just like I mentioned before. You know, my husband cannot get sexually excited around me because he's so addicted to pornography. What do I do about him? And I think the question that ought to be asked before the question, what can I do about him, is what can I do about me? Because there's only so much we can do to help a loved one. If they don't want to be helped, then we are unable to kind of do much. But I think it's important that wives seek healing for themselves. There's a great website called bloomforwomen.com, bloomforwomen.com, which helps them understand betrayal trauma and find healing. And the next thing I think and it'll also teach them how to set boundaries. And there also might be a time where the wife has to decide, I need to separate. I need to take my kids and myself away from this man because this is a very toxic environment. So that's another thing that might have to be decided. Mm-hmm. But you would hope that most husbands, if their bride came to them and said, I love you, this cannot be a part of our life. And I know that you're a good man in many respects, but this thing is, for at least the love of me, would you try not to do this? I mean, think about it. If he can't say no to porn, then what is she? When they make love, how, as one woman said to me, I don't feel like he's making love to me. I feel like he's using my body to masturbate. Now, I apologize if that's rather frank and a little disturbing, but it brings up a good point. I mean, sex ought to be the self-donating love from one to the other. I give myself to you. But when one's addicted to pornography or masturbation, it all is about him. And we begin viewing this other person, this beautiful mystery before us, as an sort of animate object for my pleasure. And no one wants to be treated like that.
Right. Matt, there's a caller, so we'll go ahead and welcome the caller in. Caller, you're on Talk About. Do you have a question? Hi.
Hi. I think it's a very important topic to discuss, and I'm happy that you're tackling it on today's show. I had a daughter who briefly, thank God, but for a few years was in the adult film industry, and she came out the other end of it a little worse for the wear, but quite okay. And you know, it's a very dangerous industry for a multitude of reasons, certainly for people that consume it, but also for the people who participate in it, as my daughter did. And I really thank you for covering this topic today. I think it's quite important.
Well, thank you. And thank you for calling in. Do you have a question for Matt while we have you on air?
I do. I'm actually here with my daughter. Her name is Ashley. And she'd just like to share with you, there was an incident that really allowed her to free herself from it. And I think the same could be applied for people who are addicted to this scourge, really. That's what it is. It's the scourge of society. So if you would permit her, she could briefly tell you about it. I think it would be beneficial to your listeners.
Okay. Matt, can you hear?
Yes, I can. It's a little muffled, okay. but I can hear, yep.
Okay.
I'm very sorry. Ash, she'll be a lot clearer. I'm not in well health. I'm in poor health. That's why my voice is faltering.
You sound fine.
Sorry.
God bless you. No, it's okay. As I say, there was an incident that she experienced that helped her leave the industry, and it's a good lesson for anyone who consumes this and finds themselves addicted to it. So I'll let her tell you herself, and if I need to jump in, I will. Ashley.
Okay, just a moment. Absolutely. We just lost him, actually. Sorry about that. Matt, have you worked with people who were in the industry and trying to get out of it?
Yeah, I have. And first, let me just extend my love and sympathy to Ashley. The porn industry is an industry which, you know, sucks in vulnerable people, chews them up and spits them out. And I'm sure that Ashley is dealing with a lot of perhaps physical and certainly emotional scars from her time in the industry. I just want to let her know that, you know, she is not the sum equation of her bad mistakes, but that she's a beautiful woman, and I hope she's surrounding herself with good women who can remind her that she's not her mistakes. I have worked with people in the industry, women and men, and it's never pretty. I mean, even Miriam Weeks, she goes by the name of Bella Knox from Duke University, you know, rather popular over the last couple of years. She's just come out. Here's just a one line from her. She says, and by the way, you know, at one point talking about how liberating she finds her work.
Right, yes.
And then she comes out recently and says this, quote, "I'm a porn star, ex-cutter, rape victim." That's a lot of baggage for one person to carry around.
It is.
I'm just taking things day by day, and I'm confused, you know. You read the stories of women after they've got out, and it's drearily predictable what they're going to say. Jenna Jameson, you know, the queen of porn, she was on Howard Stern's radio show. He asked her if she'd ever been sexually abused or molested. She said no. In her book, which I read, How to Make Love Like a Porn Star, She says that she lied like a rug in that interview. And she then goes on to recount how she was held down, hit in the face with a rock, and then gang raped by several men from her high school. As I say, it's drearily predictable. Now, when you're in the porn industry, there's obviously nothing sexy about telling your fans that you suffered some form of serious abuse or neglect as a younger child, but this does tend to be the story. Now, devil's advocate question. Well, I mean, come on. I'm sure there's some women in the industry who had a perfect upbringing who loved their dads, who are just doing it because they love the sex and the money. Now, I think to that, we could ask a question. Does a woman's inability to perceive her own dignity give you or me the right to take from her whatever she's willing to give? I don't think it does, actually. I think we should treat people with respect even if they don't think they're worthy of that respect. But, yeah, the stories are altogether drearily predictable and rather drab. I'll just finish with this quote from former porn performer Jesse Jules. She said this, quote, "People in the porn industry are numb to real life and like zombies walking around. The abuse that goes on in this industry is completely ridiculous. The way these young ladies are treated is totally sick and brainwashing. I left to the due to the trauma I experienced, even though I was only there a short time."
Hmm. Now, Matt,
very sad.
On your talk, The Man Talk, your focus is on the question to man. What kind of man do you want to be? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. I often speak at men's conferences and meetings around the country. And certainly the talk doesn't center around pornography, as if the only thing men had to do to be good was to not look at porn. You know, surely there's a lot more a guy should be doing than, you know, not being found out on AshleyMadison.com, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, ah, look at me, I'm such a hero. I didn't even try and cheat on my wife, you know. And so the talk begins by just asking the question, what kind of man do you want to be? Now, when you ask that question, and you ask somebody that question, you might say what kind of woman you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think if the other person takes you seriously, and if they're sober, they're not going to say something like the following. I want to be the kind of person who never stands up for what he believes in. I want to use people to get what I can from them, even at their expense. I want to be remembered as the kind of person whose marriage busted up because he refused to stop looking at pornography. We don't say those things. Instead, we say things like, well, I want to be a good person. I may not know what that means, but I know I want to be good, and I want to be kind, and I want to love my wife, and I want to be a good dad to my kids. You know, I want them to know I had the time for them and that I loved their mum and I was faithful to their mum, even when times were tough. Or, you know, I want to be the kind of man who, even if he meets another woman who he's very sexually attracted to, he denies himself for the good of his bride and his family. Mm-hmm. I think generally, and maybe I'm a little optimistic, but I think most people would say something like that. So that's kind of cool. I think the invitation to quit porn and start living a more interesting life is in conformity with the sorts of people we deep down want to be.
Mm-hmm. So when they go to, we're going to finish up now with you because we've held you online for 30 minutes and we had you on the show for 30 minutes. What, if they go to Integrity Restored or thepornefect.com, what kinds of things are they offered there?
Yeah. Well, they're offered there. We have artists, for example, thepornefect.com, articles, podcasts, videos. If they go into the articles media section, they can click on videos or podcasts. They can see interviews that I've done with psychologists, neurosurgeons. There's an ask an expert section. People can write a question in and have like a clinical therapist respond to them. And that sort of thing. Now, I myself am a Catholic and respond out of that worldview. If you have listeners who aren't Catholic or aren't Christian or aren't any kind of religion, I might tell them to go to either nofap.com or fightthenewdrug.com, because these are two websites that are not religious at all and are just coming at it from a sort of statistical, scientific, we want to be better people than we are sort of angle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Matt, I want to get one last question here from me.
No problem.
How can parents protect their children from this pervasive problem?
So glad you asked that.
It's important.
Yeah, let me say two things, and both of these things I don't think are optional. If you're listening to me and you want to protect your kids, don't fail in either of these two things. The first is this. We need to begin having age-appropriate conversations with our children about porn. I am of the impression, as soon as your child starts using the internet or the smartphone, you know, say around, I'm not talking about apps, you know, that he plays when he's 4 or 5. I'm talking about when he starts getting online, usually around 6 years old, I think we need to talk to our kids about porn. Now, that might seem rather toe-curling, but I'm not saying, you know, just tell them everything. What I'm saying is you might want to say something like this. You know, there's bad pictures out there, and they can hurt you. And you might want to see them, but they can still be hurtful. And if you ever see anything like that, you ever see maybe a person who's naked that's not one of the family, maybe you see him outside somewhere, maybe you see him on the computer, you should always tell mommy or daddy, and we would be so proud of you for telling us that. We want to remove the shame. It's not our kids' fault they were born into this sort of culture. So we don't want to get angry with them for that. We want to help this, keep the communication lines open. The best book, in my opinion, to facilitate that conversation is Good Pictures, Bad Pictures, Porn Proofing Today's Young Kids. You can get that on Amazon. It's a beautifully illustrated book that you can read aloud to children. The second thing, and I'll be really quick, get Covenant Eyes. Go to covenanteyes.com. Best filter on the web, but what's better than that, they have accountability software, which means once you install this onto your computer, phone, tablet, if your children go somewhere that's harmful, you will know about it because you'll get an emailed report to your inbox saying where they went, what they typed in, how long they're on this website, and then you can have a conversation with them about how harmful pornography is, how much you love them, and that's why you want the best for them, and that's why you know, you want to help them not look at that stuff again. You can talk through it with them.
Mm-hmm. That's good advice. And I know there are a lot of children who are exposed to it and probably, I mean, some of the worst images that you've maybe never seen in your life because the internet's so, you know, readily available.
Well,
so somebody should have that conversation early.
Yeah, and I think what parents need to understand, especially if they're a little older, when your kid sees porn, and he will, there's no if about it, he will or she will, what he's likely not to see is, you know, a naked woman smiling at him in a bathtub or a cornfield or something. You know, what he's going to find is body-punishing, humiliating porn. Most porn sites have rape categories, humiliation categories. This is the porn our young people are seeing. And if you give your child a smartphone without locking it down with accountability software, you've just given them a portable lecture at a movie theater. I don't say that to shame anybody, but just to kind of wake us up that because we love our children, we've got to help protect them.
Absolutely. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on today. Our guest has been Matt Frad. You can find him at thepornifect.com or integrityrestored.com. You can also check out his books. And you have I noticed you have a YouTube about 50 Shades of Grey even. And some of the...
Yeah, 50 things you need to know. So if anybody ever wants to know that many things, they can put that.
Well, we sure appreciate your perspective.
You.
You're fighting a hard fight here because, you know, the porn industry and people who consume it, they get sucked into it. It's an easy addiction to fuel and probably a tough one to even know that they need to get out of. So you have a tough fight, but we appreciate you came on today and shared that with
you're
us.
You're getting out there, Matt, so thank you.
It's good fun. It's very good fun. So thank you for having me.
Matt,
thank you for coming on.
Bye-bye.
So... that's the end of our show. We appreciate you listening in, and we will see you next time here on Talk About with Rez and Andy. Goodbye.
Thanks for joining us today on Talk About with Rez and Andy, live every Monday at 3 p.m. Please join us next week for another great show. And please call in and share your thoughts and opinions. Also, look for us and like us on Facebook and Twitter, and follow our show page on BTR.